Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Camera Work Podcast number 24. I am John Ricard, one of your hosts, and with me is Ray Tamara, who is your other host. How's everything, Ray?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for checking us out, and definitely tell your friends to check us out more and definitely get your answers or questions to us so we can answer them, and that's basically it.
Yeah, I think that one of the most coolest things about being in 2013 is that opportunity you have to interact with the people that you're seeing in social media. It's not like in the old days, like if I was a Kiss fan, I couldn't just like email Gene Simmons and have him write back to me. But if you like the podcast, you can put a comment in YouTube. I respond to every single comment we get on YouTube. You can tweet us, you can Instagram us, whatever, we respond. And if there's something you want us to talk about or just questions you have, I mean, really, reach out to us because you have that ability and we will answer them all. We're not so big that stuff like that slips under the radar, all right? But so how's it been? It's been about 3 weeks since we've been here, Ray. What have you been shooting in that time?
I shoot the celebrity arrivals at Letterman. It's every day, so I can't really remember. But last week I shot, it was a paid gig, and it was the Ebony Power 100 Gala at Time Warner Center, Rose Hall. And there was just a whole lot of people there. As far as celebs, it was Berry Gordy, honoring Berry Gordy for a Lifetime Achievement Award, and performing were the Jacksons.
Oh, God. So. What they call the Jacksons, right? It's like Tito and Marlon or something like
Tito,
that.
Tito, Marlon, Jermaine, and Randy.
Yeah, and I don't get it because those guys seem like they're so mad at Michael. It's like he can't do enough for them. It's like even though he's dead, they still want more money from him. And I don't know. It's like, but you know, like 5 years after Michael died, that's not really the time to do a Jackson's tour. You could have done it when he was alive. I don't even want to talk about it. Just that's insane to me, you know. But the gig went well, at least.
Yeah, no, the gig went well. The client was pleased. The hardest part, and if you ever get with the agency, and it's the hardest part is captioning and making sure that the captions are correct. I know that for me, even though it takes a lot of time, it makes the image that much more valuable because then there's context to the image.
But do you have to caption? Do you have to caption like earrings and bracelets and gold and, you know, things like that? Or you just have to caption the names, you mean?
No, it's captioning the names, but it's usually easier to caption if it's Angelina Jolie. You know, she's an actress and you know where you shot her. But these, of the Power 100, the Ebony Power 100, there was a lot of people that no one really knows because they're business executives or business star power or our government star power or executive star power, and just making sure that the name is right, the title is right, the company is right, because if the caption isn't right, then the image doesn't have as much value.
Right, and that's a real pain captioning that stuff, like getting the correct spelling of the name and then getting their title. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I don't like to do arrivals. It's even though if I can make money on it, I'm still not interested. The captioning just ruins it. You go home and you're spending like 2 hours and you're Googling. You have to Google every name. If somebody tells you a guy's name is Stephen Hill, I can think of 5 ways to spell Stephen and Hill, and you have to get it right for the caption. Just yesterday, I uploaded to Getty some pictures that had Fat Man Scoop in it. I put Fat Man Scoop, and it was wrong. Fat Man is one word. I emailed them and said, I got it wrong. Do you want to delete it? I'll recaption it. They said, no, just leave it. We'll fix it, but get it right in the future. And I was like, okay, and thought to myself, I'm not going to get it right in the future. I'm going to keep screwing that up, unfortunately.
But that's a mistake on your part, because what you're doing is you're committing, because this stuff lives forever. And if it's right, wrong, then that makes it that much harder for you to get the sale. So right, it behooves you to make sure that it's right. I use IMDb, I use Google. I make sure that the caption and the spelling are correct, because why have to do it again?
Oh, God, it was terrible. Yeah, I didn't want to, but I don't know. Sometimes you just think, okay, I know the spelling, like Fat Man Scoop. You're like, I can spell those 3 words, but it turns out you can't, and you really do have to Google. You have to look up basically every single name that you upload. You need, unless you've done that name before, you need to look it up and make sure it's right. Because like you said, if they search Fat Man Scoop and you put Fat Man Scoop or whatever, if you have it wrong, it may not show up in a search engine. You're not getting a sale, so it's definitely, you definitely got to do it right. I agree with you on that. So easier said than done, though. So, but in the big news, if you're into the technical stuff, was Nikon introduced something called a Nikon DF. And they introduced it in a way that it's kind of the modern way to do things, but I don't really get it. I don't really understand. This is just the way it's done. Like, they put out these teaser videos. They put out, I think it was 6 videos over like a 3-week span. And each one gave you a little bit of a hint about what the camera was. And I guess it's supposed to build like suspense and anticipation. I look at it like, for me, it just becomes sort of frustrating. I just want to know what it is now, and I don't find it fun, the teasing and the waiting. I just want them to introduce it right away. So I don't find it fun. I prepare to sort of tune it out and wait until it gets announced. But I think the other result of that kind of campaign is that everybody starts speculating. And the speculation is always better than it turns out to be. I don't care if it's a movie, a book, whatever. As everybody on the internet starts writing, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's the other, what they're hoping for is always better than what it turns out to be. It's always a disappointment by the time you release that product. And I just think they would do better to just, I don't know, just announce it and put it out or whatever and not try to build that hype and build up everyone's hopes for something that ultimately leads to disappointment. Did you follow that at all? Like, were you aware of that teaser campaign?
Absolutely not. I mean, that stuff is, it just goes over my head because it's not important to me. I'm not waiting for the newest product. I know that what I have now is, it does the job. I have D4s. I waited, I had the D3 before that. I didn't get the D3S. When the D4 arrived, I checked to make sure that the specs it can do what I needed it to do, which was take pictures, focus quickly. And other than that, I don't really get caught up in the new gear.
Right. Now, stuff. I get caught up in it quite a bit, although professionally I've been using the D3 and the D3S for, I don't know, 5-6 years now. They work great. Don't really need to upgrade that, so I haven't moved to the D4. I haven't had a reason to, because the D3S is such a great camera. But I definitely keep track of it, and I find it interesting to see what's coming out and stuff. But the thing, so with this camera, the speculation was that Nikon is finally making a manual, old-style camera. Now, this is something a lot of people have been waiting for, a kind of stripped-down DSLR, because we've never gotten that from any of the companies, frankly. Everybody just keeps adding features and adding features and adding features. But when the product came out, I thought it was, to me, it's a really big miss. It's a really big fail in my view. And here's the thing. So what they did was they put a lot of retro, what they called like retro type controls on the camera. So it has an ISO, like a dial for ISO instead of like push buttons and a screen. It does the same thing for shutter speed. There's a dial for exposure compensation. There's a dial. And it's supposed to look like an old style camera. But here's the thing I don't understand now. Most people who listen to this podcast, because, you know, we see the statistics, are listening on iTunes, so they're not watching us right now. But if you're watching, I actually brought something in to show for the people who do watch the podcast on YouTube. Otherwise, if you're on iTunes, just listen. It will make just as much sense. So if you were to go back to something called the Nikon F5, which was a camera that I loved, and the F5 came out in, I believe the year was 1995, that the Nikon F5, 1996 it came out, the F5. If you looked at a brand new D3X, which is a new Nikon camera, and a 1995 F5, if you looked at them from the side, they look basically identical. If you looked at them from the top, the two cameras are basically identical. If you looked at them from the other side, again, they're almost identical. What this means is that, and the backs are kind of different because one has a screen and one does not. But what this means to me is that Nikon has essentially been using the same type of controls for their cameras since 1996. That's a really long time. And in that time, they've actually gotten it right. Meaning, we're not fighting the camera. It's very easy to set your shutter speed, set your aperture, set your ISO, set your white balance. They figured it out right in 96. They've been doing it, I don't know how many years that is. It's at least 15, right? 96 to now, to 2013. They've gotten it right. There's no reason to change it to another method because the method that we have works right. And if you're trying to go retro, how far back are you trying to go? So you're telling me you're going to make a retro camera that goes back before 1996? Who are these people looking for a camera that is like not 10 years old style controls or even 15 years, but these guys are looking for controls from like 35 years ago? Who are these people? I don't understand it. You follow what I'm saying? Like nostalgia or retro, to me that's like 10 years, 15 years. I'm not interested in going back 30 years. It doesn't make sense. Now, the retro controls can make sense if the camera is designed right. Like I've got retro controls on my Leica M9, but it makes sense because the M9 is a stripped down camera. The DF is not a stripped down camera. It's got all the features of the D800, all the features of the D4S with retro controls. Doesn't make sense. The controls that we have today work fine. I guarantee you I can change my shutter speed faster on a D3 than you're going to change it on a DF with the old style manual controls. I mean, am I making sense in what I'm saying?
I don't, it doesn't really matter to me. No, not really.
I think I'm making a lot of sense. And the thing is this, let me tell you the camera we were waiting for, okay? So follow this progression of cameras, okay? Nikon made the F3 in 1980. 1980, they made something called a Nikon F3, okay? In 19, let me get the year for the F4. F4 came out in 1988. 8 years later, they made the F4. The F4 had a lot of improvements over the F3. It was autofocus, it had different metering modes, and a few other changes. When they created the F4, they kept the F3 in production. They understood that some people wanted the more stripped down camera, the camera that did not have autofocus. You follow so far? Okay, F5 came out in 1996, like I said, correct? 1996. They kept the F3 in production, even though it didn't have all the things the F5 had. And the F5 was revolutionary. You could actually, you know, today you have this menu with all these different options. The F5, they didn't have a screen on a camera that did it, but what they had instead was you could plug the camera into your computer and use your computer to set these options, like how does the autofocus work, and does the film go back into the can at the end, or does it stay out, whatever. They had a ton, of like 50 or something options that you could set on your computer. Super advanced camera. 1996, they kept the F3 in production, even though it did not have all of those features. You know when the F3 went out of production? 2001. They kept it in production because they understood that if you had this state-of-the-art F5, there might still be a time that you wanted a camera that was missing features, a camera that was stripped down. Whereas in digital today, let's say you love your D4, which you do, you love your D4. Right. You don't have an option. There's no Nikon option for you to have a camera that does not have like 3 metering modes and 6 flash modes, right? Your camera does repeating flash and rear curtain sync and all of this. Do you use any of this stuff?
No.
No. Do you use multiple exposure capability?
No.
You know, do you use focus lock on with tracking? And
no.
Do you use HDR on the camera?
Like, yeah, but I also don't need a camera that doesn't have that.
You might. You don't know. They never gave you one. How do you know? How do you know?
Because I don't use that. So I don't use that, so I don't need that.
I think
and
you
what
do.
I need is right. What I got. And if I needed it, then I would know I needed it.
I disagree because I think that I think that the fact that the F3 stayed in production had to be indicative of the fact that people were still buying it. They would not have kept it in production if people weren't buying it. In production means they're making new ones. It doesn't just mean you can still go buy the old ones. Mm-hmm. That means like in 2001, you could buy an F3 that was like physically created in 2000.
Yeah,
people wanted a stripped down camera. And the fact that people are buying Leica M9s, Fuji XE1s, and Fuji X Pro ones is proof that people are trying to find cameras that are a little simpler.
Is the F3 body the basis for this DF camera?
It depends on who you ask. Nikon would say to you that it's based on cameras like the FM2 or the F3. That's what they say. I disagree. I disagree completely. I think the basis for the DF is really like a D700, D800, D600. Those are the basis for the body. They just stuck some retro controls on it. Because what those cameras in particular, the FM2, which is another camera, came out in 1980, stayed in production probably past 2001. It was in production as an FM3 forever. Those cameras represented cameras that were missing features. And it wasn't supposed to be your only camera. It was supposed to be a different kind of camera, a secondary camera. And tell me if you remember this. Remember when cell phones first started getting popular and you could first start accessing your email, or maybe you could send a text, or maybe you could start visiting a website. Do you remember how some people were walking around carrying phones that just made phone calls? They were, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a movement to go retro and to do this stuff, and I see a lot of characters. See, I'm not versed in all these other bodies because it doesn't matter to me. What matters right. is the body that makes me money right. now. So, right. When I saw the body, this DF camera, I said, it looks kind of cool. Maybe I would have to get it in my hands to right. see if it feels good and it makes picture taking enjoyable. Other right. than that, I don't need that camera.
Right.
So it's not on my radar.
Right. And I think the funny thing is about it is that it's going to sell like crazy. The pre-orders, you read on the web, pre-orders are through the roof and stuff. But I think one of the little problems with even looking at the pre-orders or how it sells, if you want the D4 chip, which is what you have, this amazing chip in a camera, it's a 16 megapixel chip, you can just shoot in the dark. I mean, it's incredible how good it is at low light, and it's high enough resolution that it's perfect. But that chip, the only way to get that chip right now is a D4, which costs $6,000. The new DF has the same chip for $3,000. So if you want that chip at a lower price, you have to buy the DF. So a lot of people might be buying a DF, not because they care about the fact that there's a shutter speed dial and a dial for ISO, but they just want that chip in a small body that's half the price of the D4. Like if I bought the DF, which is possible that I'll buy it, it'll be because I want that chip, not because I, for some dumb reason, I just want to turn a shutter speed dial. I mean, that's insane to me. I just want to roll a shutter speed dial. Yeah, I'm fine with a shutter speed dial if the camera brings me back to an F3 or an FM2. But if it's essentially a D700, a D600, a D800, if it's a state-of-the-art camera, then give me state-of-the-art controls. Don't give me an iPhone with a rotary dial on it. That's what you're doing. I don't need a shutter speed dial on a camera that has like six different flash modes and metering modes and all these options. To me, it's a fail because it's not the camera that I was waiting for. So that's my take on the D4, DF.
And to me, I think you're overthinking it. I know that for me, it doesn't matter. If the camera has the features that I want, then I'll use it. If it doesn't, then I won't use it.
Yeah, but again, sometimes you're waiting for stuff. Like, you're waiting for certain products. Like say, I remember they made an iPod, right? Mm-hmm. And then everybody loved the iPod. It was amazing. You had 10,000 songs right there at your fingers. Okay. And then people were jogging, and they were like, we need an iPod that doesn't have to hold a lot of songs. It just needs to be light. So when I'm jogging, I don't have to carry it. It doesn't weigh me down. And eventually they gave you, I guess it was the Nano. I guess it was the iPod Nano. And then Shuffle was another one. Like sometimes there's a need for a product. So let's say you love the chip in the D4. But you might say, I want a camera that I can take with me on a vacation that's not as big and heavy, not as expensive, but still has a great chip. You're waiting for that. Or in my case, I'm waiting for a camera that doesn't have a whole bunch of features because I don't know, just sometimes it's cool like that to have a camera that doesn't have a lot of features, just as a backup, as a secondary camera. And they refuse to give it to us. They just will not do it. They'll make it look like an old camera, but it won't do what the old cameras did. And I just feel like if they did it 15 years ago when they kept the F3, remember the F4 got discontinued and they kept the F3 in production. I think how crazy that is. They kept the F3 going, so you could go into a store and buy an F5 and an F3. You couldn't buy an F4. They kept the old-style camera in production, and they should do it today. Give us a camera that's missing features, that's stripped down, that's designed like a retro camera. I think a ton of people would buy it. So anyway, that's my take on the DF, okay? So I had something, I don't know, mildly interesting that happened or something that was annoying to me.
Okay.
Which I guess that's kind of the theme of the podcast is stuff that annoys John Ricard. But I'm going to tell a story, but I need to like disguise the story so that it's not recognizable. Okay, so I'm just going to ask you three questions. Just pick either one. It doesn't matter, even though this doesn't make any sense yet. But pick one, male or female?
Male.
Okay, male. A celebrity, a music artist, or an industry person?
Celebrity.
Okay, celeb. And the last one, are we talking about a makeup artist, a hair person, or a fashion stylist?
Stylist.
A stylist. Okay, so I'm going to tell the story with those details because, it's hard to be random. You know, it's hard for me to make it up. So I'm going to use this just to make sure that, like, I'm disguising what I'm trying to say. Okay, so anyway, so I call in this guy. He's supposed to be the stylist on a shoot. Okay. Now, maybe I didn't give all the relevant information. I didn't mention that we're doing a celebrity. Okay. But I mentioned it's not a particularly high-paying gig, but it's a gig. It's cash that day. You're going to get a couple bucks, whatever. Person says, well, my normal rate is X, but okay. No, actually, then I emailed the guy back, and I'm like, hey, if you can't do the gig, it's completely cool. I get it. See, I never get mad if someone says, I can't do the gig because it's below my rate or whatever. I'm fine with that. I think periodically we all work a little bit below our rate for different reasons at different times. It happens. I can't speak for everybody, but occasionally I've done it, and I know a lot of other people who do it, okay? But I don't get mad at you. It's not like I'm not going to call you again. I get it. You don't want to do it. It's below your rate. Fine. Cool. But the person said he would do the job. But to me now, if you do the job, you've got to do the job essentially like you got your full rate.
Right.
You can't turn around and go, well, it's not my full rate, so I'm going to do a half-assed job. I mean, does that make sense?
No, I agree with that. I've taken jobs that, like, say I would get $1,000 for it, but, I would have to accept $200. When I show up to the job, I'm giving that same type of effort. And right. That same type of, if I was getting my same rate, because that's just how I work. I don't work any other way.
Right. That's how you should work. So anyway, the guy comes in, and it's like, as soon as he gets in the door, he's like, oh, you know, I got to run to a meeting for a minute in the middle of the shoot. I'm just like, well, I'm like, okay. Like, I'm not your daddy. I can't be like, no. But to me, it's unprofessional, and it's something you probably wouldn't do if it was, you know, your full rate. So since you figure you're not getting your full rate, you're going to go schedule a meeting in the middle of the shoot. You're going to disappear for an hour. And you know how things get, the hour turns into 90 minutes, whatever. But I'm like, okay. And then he goes like, you don't really need me to stay to the very end, do you? And I'm just like, to me, that kind of stuff, you feel it out. Like, if we don't need you, I'm the first one to tell anybody, hair, makeup, styling, dude, you can go home. I got this, you know. I'm fine with this girl now, or I'm fine with this guy. I don't have a reason to just hold people here. But to me, you feel that stuff out. Maybe we need you. Maybe we don't. We might need you. Maybe the clothes aren't going to be right. We need you to make sure they're good. Whatever. But you don't walk in and start the gig that way. You follow? That's not good karma. That's not a good way to start the day. Anyway, so we start shooting. We start getting everything ready. And as he's talking to the person that was shooting, or the female that was shooting, he realizes this is a celebrity. Now everything starts to change. All of a sudden, you know, you don't really need to go to that meeting. All of a sudden, you're not in a rush to leave. You're sticking around. You're taking Instagram photos. You're tweeting. You're shooting with this celebrity. By the time we got to the end of the shoot, which the guy never left, by the time we got to the end of the shoot, he had finished his part of the shoot. And I'm not lying to you. This guy hung around for between 45 minutes to an hour later than I needed him. When I was completely done, he's still here. The same guy who walked in the door and said, hey, you don't need me to stick around. He's hanging out an hour after his part's done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's other things that I get mad about, but it's not that. If there was contingencies, like if I took a rate that was, if I accepted a rate and there was aspects that I needed to go to a meeting because I just needed to do it, then I would do that, or not.
Well, you'd let me know before you walk in the door.
I would say, hey, I'm going to take this job, but I also have a meeting because it's for another job, and right. I can't right. jeopardize that. I'll help you out. Right. And that's what I've done with other photographers. And the same has gone for me, where photographers say, hey, Ray, I know you need help on this job, but the money you're paying isn't what I usually get, but I'll take this job because you need my help.
Right.
And I was like, okay, thanks for the favor. I got you on the next time. And I reciprocate that so that if there's another gig that is below my rate, I was like, okay, let me know what you need and let's knock it out so that I can, you know, be square with you.
Right. But you don't bring your D game because you accepted a rate or a job that you don't think is fun. I think it's just wrong. I think like when you do that, it's like almost like whorish behavior, because now that it's a celebrity, okay, now you want to come out and give 100%. I think it's wrong. And excuse me, it's an interesting contrast. So I have a female friend, who was diagnosed with breast cancer, a young girl, she's like under 30, and they said they have to remove both of her breasts. I mean, it was so, you know, hard to hear that. And you know, you wish you could do something, there's not much I can do. But I said to her, let me do some pictures of you. Let me do some really beautiful photographs of you. And, you know, just so you have that. You know, because I'm picturing like if they're gonna cut a breast off, at least I'd have some pictures where, you know, her boobs were there or whatever. You know, just let me do this for you. The only thing I know how to do, let me do this for you. So we decide to do the shoot. Now I decide to pay hair and makeup for the shoot. And I don't really need it. I can do almost any shoot without hair and makeup. But my point was, I wanted the psychological aspect. I wanted to play queen for a day. I wanted this girl to be queen for the day. I want her to come in, have a whole big hair thing, a whole big makeup thing. We've got the music playing. We're in the big studio in Times Square. So she could really have this memorable event. So I book hair and makeup. I book, and I'm going to name them. I don't have to change a bunch of stuff for this story, which is so beautiful. So I book Denise Mojica for makeup and Danielle Crawford for hair. And here's the thing, because these girls are so just amazing.
They're busy.
They're busy. Work. They work. Yeah, Danielle, yeah. Forget about it. Danielle's doing Coco's hair in Vegas, like, you know, but here's the thing. I don't tell them anything about Ina. I just go, it's a regular girl, meaning she's not a model, she's not a celebrity, whatever. She's a regular girl, we're shooting her. They did not know for the entire shoot that, well, this is an important shoot because, you know, she was just diagnosed with cancer and this is a shoot that she's going to keep the rest of her. I didn't tell them anything. We came because I didn't want to stigmatize the girl. I didn't want to be like, oh, right. Look at the poor pity case, because that's not what it was for me. It was like a celebration of how beautiful you are. Let's just shoot it. These girls came out. They made her feel like a star. Because remember, half the point of the shoot was how she felt. Not just the pictures, but that queen for a day. She felt like a queen. She's got Danielle, who does Coco, Ice-T's wife's hair. And this girl's got blonde hair. Coco's got the blonde hair. She's putting the same kind of crazy blonde giant hair that Coco has that she's putting in this girl's hair. The girl was so excited about the shoot. These girls, they stay late. They work like crazy. And I texted them the next day, and this is going back months now, but I texted them the next day and I said, I just want you to know, the reason we did that shoot, that girl was diagnosed with cancer, you guys did something so special for her. And the way you treat people like that, that's what really says who you are. People who are regular people, not the people who you think are going to move your career for. Because Danielle and Denise are not saying, oh my God, if I shoot her, maybe it'll lead to another job. It's a dead end when you shoot people like her. You know, they don't have any money to do another shoot for like a year or two. But they treated her so beautifully. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And I think that's how I try to do my job. And I think that's how everybody should try to do the job. But don't come in with one attitude one way. And then when you discover this person might help your career or might look good on your Instagram, now all of a sudden you bring your A game. I think it's a crappy way to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just like each one teach one, or you treat how you treat other people how you want to be treated. I know that in my life, I've always treated the person, the celeb, as well as the mailroom person, the same, because you just never know. And this woman that you've scheduled a photo shoot, you never know who she knows. So right. That could lead to other jobs. I know that when I was working at a record label, and the mailroom guys heard that I had gotten fired and that I was going to be escorted out of the building, you know, they was like, Ray, man, we heard. Mm-hmm. And then they were there because, I mean, I had built a relationship with those guys. I would give them food. Right. I would give them stuff. I would put some money in their pocket for doing some other jobs that were, you know, one of the reasons why I got let go. So so there's things that happen. And, you know, yo, we're sorry to let you're not going to be here, you know, whatever we can do to help you. And I still maintain those relationships. So after the fact, when I was escorted out of the building, you know, I still had my connection. Yo, I need some copies done. I need these things shipped out to Dallas. Right. And okay, we got you, Ray. Just bring the stuff in and then we'll do it on the corporate account. And I was like, okay. So instead of paying $1,000 for shipping, I would pay like, you know, the homie rate.
Right. But so, the bottom line is you should treat people right, is the bottom line. You treat the guy in the mailroom proper. You don't disrespect him because he's the mailroom and then go be a different person to the corporate guy. Mm-hmm. It's not good karma. It's not genuine. It's not real. And it's just not right. And I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. And I'm proud that I am not that way, that I bring my A. And I look at it that the yardstick that I use, I call it like in my head, I call it like the iPad principle. If whatever job I'm doing, if you're a regular person and the job I'm doing for you is enough money to buy an iPad, then I look at it as a huge big deal that you're spending that much money. Because I use my iPad every single day. Me and my wife fight over who gets to use the iPad. And when it's not us fighting, my daughter, it's the three of us, everybody wants to use the iPad. And if you're paying me enough to buy an iPad, which most times you are, then that means that you're giving up something pretty cool to do this shoot. And I should treat it like the way the shoot is for you, and for you it's the most important shoot in the world, and I need to treat it that way, even if it's not the most important shoot in the world for me. Mm-hmm. I need to make you feel that way. And I know with assistants, I've had a ton of assistants, and if I would call an assistant and I would say to her, hey, I need you, can you come in Wednesday, 6 to 9? And if she goes, who are we shooting? I don't want her. That's not the kind of person that I want there, because I want you to be there for whatever reason, but it's not, well, if it's this celebrity, I'm free, and if it's not that celebrity, I'm not free. I don't think it's right. If you're there to learn, or you're there to make a couple bucks, or whatever the reason is, you can have your reasons, but your reason can't be like opportunistic in that manner. That's a kind of short-sighted opportunisticness. And all of the assistants that have worked with me for long periods of time, they were all people that they were like, people that were just like on the team. They were like, they were going to do it no matter what. And sometimes they got to the studio and it was an amazing artist that they were a fan of and they were glad to be in that room. And other times it was just some guy, but they treated it the same way. And that's the kind of people I like to get on my team. And I think that's the way people should be. So I just thought it was interesting. So that was my disguised version of it, using Ray's details to flesh out the story and not make it identifiable, okay?
You know what was that thing? Because I've been working on a couple of red carpets this week, and I usually don't do that. I usually work by myself so I can avoid stuff that's really bothersome to me, that really annoys me. And I work with a lot of coworkers, and a lot of these men and women are nut huggers. I call them nut huggers, brown nosers. They're just like, oh, how are you doing, Mr. Publicist? It's great to see you. What client do you have? How can I help you? You look great today. And it's just all bullshit spewing out of their mouth. And I'm like, I mean, and that's how they can get invited to these high profile events and cover these men and women. And obviously that helps, but it's something that I can't do. I can't say, hey, publicist B, hi. I would just say hi, because I don't need to have a relationship. All I need to do is shoot your client. Bam, 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 bam. And then be done with it. So I'm not saying, hey, maestro, great job on that campaign last week.
Unless you really thought it was a great job on the campaign. But if you didn't, you're not going to just run up and do it. And that's a thing for me, is that I find that for me, most of the time, like, I tend to be a sort of nervous kind of person, period. Kind of like hyperactive, overthinking things, a little nervous, period. But I find that I shoot a lot of celebs. I'm around that pretty often. But I'm more nervous. I would be more nervous around a celebrity that is an important celebrity to me, not in terms of their fame. If that person meant something to me, then it might be a big deal for me to meet them, because I'm listening to that record all the time and it means something to me. But the fact that you've sold 8 million records, no, I'm not going to run up and just try to be your friend or try to connect with you on that level. There's artists that I've sort of connected with where, I just like their vibe, and it's just a cool, like Lloyd on Universal Records. He's just a cool dude. Like, every time I've ever worked with him, he's just cool. But it has nothing to do with, like, what status I think he is in R&B. It's just, whenever I see Lloyd, I like him, and I give him a big hug and he says, hey, and it's just cool like that. Or Diamond, like, I love Diamond. Diamond's not the biggest rapper on the charts, you know what I'm saying? But I love Diamond, she's just so cool. And I would be more nervous around her than someone bigger who I didn't connect to that way. But yeah, you have a lot of people, again, but it's the same theme of just being opportunistic. You don't care about that publicist. You just know that publicist works A, B, C, D. So you're going to go up there and just almost like shuck and jive in to impress that publicist. And like you're saying, you have a hard time doing that, and I have a hard time doing it too. It's just, the tricky part is, you do have to find a balance of being sociable and making people comfortable. And you have people, friends we know, guy like Ronnie Wright, guy like Johnny Nunez, they make people comfortable when they're in the room. They do. They go up, they talk to them, they laugh, they smile, they compliment them, they joke at them. And people feel comfortable that those bodies are in the room. And there's something to be said for having a certain amount of it, just not to the point that it's fake and phony.
Yeah,
that's the point, the problem, whatever.
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you have to do what's comfortable for you, but you also have to deliver. Mm-hmm. So delivering in whatever capacity that you're hired for. So I think we should end it with, like, if you take a job, then bring your A game. If you take, if your A game isn't A, then think about what's the problem and correct it.
Right, but again, and it shouldn't. You should be bringing your A game no matter what. Like, mm-hmm. and another way to look at it is, like, again, and this is the crucial part of it. I don't know if we stress this part enough, is that don't take certain jobs. If you can't give that person your A game, you should not take the job. There's nothing wrong with turning down jobs. It's completely fine. Every job you turn down just opens the door for another job to come in. It's no different than if you were dating. If some girl were dating guys and the guy was beneath her, I would say to her, don't date that guy. Wait until you get the guy that's right. But if you're going to date the guy, then you should be right with him. You shouldn't. Don't date below your level. Don't take jobs below your level. And again, any job I'm on, that's my level. That's my level. Might be my level that day, but that's my level. I'm never going to act like I'm above that job. It's not right. It's not the way to be, you know. Yep. One other thing I thought that was a little interesting was Scott Adams. Do you know him? He's the guy who wrote the Dilbert cartoon. And he has a book coming out. I have to look it up, what the book is called. But it was interesting, but he was talking about the ideas of, like, goals. And he had this kind of philosophy in the article that setting a goal is not necessarily a great thing. Like, do you do that? Do you have literally written goals penned up someplace?
Yeah, I have goals written, but I don't necessarily achieve it. The thing that I've been contemplating and been just trying to grasp is I've been reading Tim Ferriss and the stuff that he talks about, which is like, or not even that, the stuff that he's talking about, which is 4-hour body, 4-hour work week, 4-hour cook. And another thing that I've been really thinking about is drilling, practicing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, in photography, in speaking
drill?
With people.
What's the drilling in photography?
Well, I have a Leica that I never use. And I never use it because I don't like to manual focus. Right. So one of the things that I've been trying to drill is manually focusing my Leica so it's comfortable. So it's not right. Something that's foreign. And I've been, as far as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I always get caught in the half guard, and mm-hmm. I've been practicing hook sweeps from the half guard.
Right.
So
just drilling it.
Drilling so that it's not a obstacle. It's not a roadblock. And these are roadblocks that I create for myself. It's right. Not something that I can do, because that's not. That's not it. I've done it before. And the same thing where you're always harping that I should practice talking to other people.
Right.
Practice. Right. I know you can. Right. I know you can talk to other right. people. You just don't. So you should practice.
Right. And that's the funny thing, because, again, you are much like me in the sense that there are plenty of times that you do not want to talk to people, which is weird that we're doing this podcast and we're talking to people. But you are very much like me in that. Like I said, I've gone to, like, say, music videos where I was going to be on set for like 10 or 12 hours taking photos. And in between the parts that I'm shooting, I've got Howard Stern in my, earpiece, whatever you call it, the headphones. And I'm just fine in my own little world, kind of watching what's going on at the video. And I'm listening to Howard. And I'm not talking to everybody. But I certainly know how to talk to people. And occasionally I would look at, like, a book on, like, how to be more social. And the funny thing was, they would give you these solutions. They would go, like, look for interesting topics and make notes. And then you give this note in your pocket of, like, 10 interesting topics. And then when you get stuck, like, just excuse yourself, run to the bathroom, check your notes, and come back and talk about it. And I'm like, no. I don't have a problem coming up with stuff to say. I can talk to you all day. I can talk to anybody from that, you said before, the guys in the mailroom to the corporate guy. I can talk to anybody all day about anything. I just don't want to. I'm more comfortable often just, you know, playing with my phone or listening to Howard Stern or whatever. So you are like that too, in that when you decide that you want to talk to people, you're fine. You're not stuck. Well, what do I say? You know, the other day we had this Tanisha Scott. She's a choreographer. She does, like, Sierra and, I mean, just everybody. Like, there's only three hip-hop choreographers, really. Fatima Robinson, Laurianne Gibson, and Tanisha Scott. Like, they've got the lock on it. So she's done one-third of every hip-hop person you know. And she's amazing. She's fantastic. And she was in our studio. We had a casting here for a Sean Paul and Mr. Vegas video. And there's all these girls. They're, like, dancing on their head. It's all this crazy reggae stuff, dancing. And I've never met Tanisha. Like, I've taken pictures of her at events, but I never had a conversation with her. You were talking to her. You brought her over. You introduced her to me. And it was all perfectly fine. You're laughing and joking with her. I'm joking with her. We're all talking. And I said to you when she walked away, I'm like, you know, like, you should be doing that like 24 hours a day because it's so not easy for you. It's, I don't know, you do it well. You got to just do it more. So yeah, I'm always on you about that. But I'm on you because it's kind of like in that Rocky movie, the first Rocky movie, when Rocky says to Mickey, it's such a great scene. He says, like, look, all of these guys here, you're always picking on me. Why are you always picking on me instead of all these other guys? And Mickey goes, because out of all the guys that came in here ever, you were the one guy that could make it. That's why I'm picking on you. And that is why I'm going to you, like, hey, you should talk to people more, because I know you can do it. If you couldn't do it, you know. What we got though. Let's go without video for a second. Because I know you can do it. If I didn't think you could do it, then it'd be no point in bothering you about something that you can't do. But right. I know you can do it. It's just, you got to be like me. You don't want to do it, but sometimes you got to do it. It's part right. of the game of the business we're in.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't have to do it now. With the business I'm in, I don't have right. to do any of that.
Correct.
I don't have to do right. anything.
But if you ever want to transition out of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
You know. And then the key is that you always have to be working on the skill for your next job now, because right. you don't want to wait until you say, well, I want to, whatever, I want to be, you know, whatever, a corporate headshot photographer, and then start making those contacts. You want to do all of that stuff now is the right. key. All right? Right. But we're going to wrap there. So I thank everybody for listening. And again, give us some comments there on the YouTube page and send us some tweets and stuff like that. Let us know what's going on in your life so we can talk to you guys some more. Okay. If you want to find me, check my Instagram. It's John Ricard, JohnRicard. And where do we find you, Ray?
Well, you're not going to find me a lot because it's getting cold in New York City, so I'm not going to be out as much. You can find me at www.raytamara.com, and you can see my work at Getty Images. Just search for my name, Ray Tamara. And then finally, I want to shout out all the listeners at the Academy, all like Steven and Eric and Youssef, and then the other guy, the Matthew, the big photographer guy for Tyra Banks, and just all the people that check right. us out and listen to the stuff that we talk about, and hopefully you can be a guest on the show.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.